Hello and welcome to Sip Sip Hooray, the podcast for people thirsty for fun and interesting stories about the world of wine. Oregon's Willamette Valley is widely regarded as an exceptional wine-producing region, thanks to the climate, the terroir, diverse soil, and the region's commitment to being good stewards of the land. Those factors are all part of what makes Iris Vineyards so special. This family-owned estate is producing terrific wines that capture the spirit of the Willamette Valley. We're delighted to be joined today by Aaron Lieberman, the winemaker at Iris, to learn more about what makes Iris bloom. We are the two Marys who like to eat, drink, and be merry. I'm Mary Babbitt.
I'm Mary Orlin. And the Northern Willamette Valley gets a lot of attention. It's probably wineries you've heard of, but the southern part of the Willamette Valley should be on your radar too. There's some fantastic wines coming out of this region. You may have heard of King Estate, but one of its neighbors is also making amazing wines from Pinot Gris to Pinot Noir. And we are so excited to introduce you today to Iris Vineyards and its winemaker, Aaron Lieberman. Aaron joins us from the winery in Southern Oregon, about 20 or so miles outside of Eugene for reference. Aaron has always given back to the community ever since he was younger, before getting into winemaking. He spent time in the Peace Corps. He's given back through being involved in education. And currently he's involved in a diversity, equity, and belonging and inclusion task force in the Willamette Valley. And we are so delighted to introduce you to Aaron, to his wines, which we are really excited about, and to the story about Iris Vineyards. So Aaron, welcome to Sip Sip Hooray.
Thank you, Mary and Mary. I'm really pleased to be here, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk about the winery.
Well, great. So you have been there from the beginning, 1996 about, am I right?
So the vineyard was established in 1996. The first wines were made under the Iris label in 2002, and I was hired in 2008, the same year that our winery was built.
Okay, gotcha. Well, before we talk about Iris, I'd like to get a little bit of background about you. Mary Orlin mentioned you spent some time in the Peace Corps. I'd love to hear about that and what led you to your role as a winemaker.
Yeah, so it's kind of an interesting story. When I started college, I went to Oregon State University. I originally wanted to be a veterinarian.
Oh, and really?
To that end, I started out as a animal science major. And by the end of my sophomore year, I had fallen in love with soil science and changed my major to crop and soil science. So the following 2 years, my junior and senior year, I really dug into that, so to speak. And there were a number of professors and grad students in my department who were very, very excited about the wine industry and the development that was happening in the Willamette Valley at that time. So that would have been 91, 92, 93. And there was a lot going on and a lot of excitement about the wine industry around the valley at that time. So that was sort of my first indication that could be my eventual career, although I had not really decided at that time. When I went into the Peace Corps, I was initially offered a placement in Africa working with water resources development. And what happened there is that program didn't start for, I think, 8 months or so after I graduated. And I didn't really want to wait that long and, you know, sit around and maybe have a part-time job. So I ended up taking an assignment in Guatemala that started only 4 months after my graduation.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. And so the Guatemala placement was it was called Corn and Bean Seed Improvement and Post-Harvest Management.
Wow, what does that involve?
What we were doing was working with subsistence farmers. And so this is really common in Peace Corps. We're not working with corporations and industrial farms. Typically, it's usually farmers who have very small properties, and they mostly consume the product that they grow, or they sell it locally at market.
Oh, I had no idea the Peace Corps worked that way. That's cool.
Yeah. So I was working with small farmers on selecting mostly corn. So selecting plants in their fields that were healthy and productive, and then marking those plants. And we would go back to those plants and look at how disease resistant they are compared to the other plants and how much production they were giving us. So we wanted to select the ones that obviously were more disease resistant and more productive, and then save that seed. Sounds really basic, but what was happening more commonly with farmers who were not in the program is they would simply harvest everything and put it all together. And then when it came time to plant again, they would just randomly select whatever corn seed they had in their bin, rather than being focused on, you know, getting the corn seeds that were the best ones.
Right, propagating the best of the bunch. That can really make a difference in a community. You know, you're improving the output of their crop. That had to be pretty gratifying.
It was, and we were seeing in the third and fourth years of the program, 50% to or more improvement in yield.
Oh, that's wow. Incredible.
Wow. Imagine, did you pick up a lot of Spanish while you were down there as well?
Yeah, so it's interesting. I took high school Spanish, didn't take anything in college. And when I got to Guatemala, I basically knew nothing, except to how to ask for a beer or where the bathroom was.
Una cerveza, por favor.
Exactly.
¿Dónde está el baño?
Two really important things, but definitely doesn't make you conversational.
Right. Tell me how the work, your background in soil science and then the work doing the corn and bean seed improvement either led you to winemaking or helps now with your winemaking.
So I think, clearly both things have a lot to do with agriculture. Mm-hmm. And when I returned to Oregon in 96, I got right into the agricultural side of the wine industry. I got a job managing the vineyard at Amity Vineyards, which is very near. I ended up moving back temporarily, living with my father, and he had a place just on the east side of the Eola Amity Hills, and Amity Vineyards was right over the hill on the west side, so it was like a 20-minute drive to work or something. So that was really convenient, and that got me right into the industry right away. I loved it immediately, being out in the vineyard and tending the vines. And so I did that for 5 years, not at Amity the whole time, but in the vineyards for 5 years before I transitioned to winemaking in 2001.
But what a great part of the Willamette Valley to work in Eola Amity Hills. I mean, the wines, the Chardonnays, the Pinots from there are spectacular.
They really are.
Yeah. So what was next?
Following Amity Vineyards?
Yes.
I went to work for Durant Vineyards in the Dundee Hills.
Okay.
As their vineyard foreman. At the time, they were not making any of their own wine. They were selling all of the grapes predominantly to Sokol Blosser Winery, Argyle Winery, and Ponzi Vineyards.
Okay.
So I was there for a couple of years and then started working for a vineyard management and development company called Advanced Vineyard Systems. And that was sort of a turning point for me.
How so?
Well, I worked for them for a couple of years and I got to see vineyards, you know, all over the northern part of the Willamette Valley, mainly Yamhill County. But it sort of opened my eyes to the differences between the sub AVAs. So like how Eola Hills is different from Dundee Hills, is different from Yamhill Carlton, and so on and so forth. And, you know, just to see the variety of soils and the variety of microclimates that were available just in that little part of the valley, which, as you acknowledged in the intro, is the primary growing area in the Willamette Valley. Then in 01, one of our clients in the Dundee Hills built a winery, and I asked my boss if I could do the vintage at the winery. So that was 01, like I said, and their first vintage. And so that winery is still around. It's called the Ponte Cellars. And their original winemaker, Isabel Dutart, whom I worked under in 01, is still there. So she came to us from Burgundy and had made some wine in different parts of the world, including in Burgundy. And so her perspective on wine and on Pinot Noir and how to make it is was a big influence on me then and continues to be a big influence.
That's great. So up until this point, you had really been involved in the vineyard. So this was really your first foray into winemaking.
Correct.
So tell me how that entry into winemaking went for you and what's the learning curve been like? And was it something that you found hard to learn or you were naturally good at or what?
Yeah, it's definitely a steep learning curve. I think I was well prepared to get into it, given my educational background and my work background. With the degree in crop and soil science demands a lot of focus on the technical side of things. So you know, soils involves chemistry and microbiology and physics. And so I had all of that science background, which is really important in winemaking, particularly chemistry and microbiology. And then my 5 years of experience in the vineyards, you know, really understanding how grapes are grown and the factors that influence the quality of the fruit and abundance of fruit, it were really, really important, I think, in my transition into winemaking and it being a successful transition.
Sure. So what was it about making wine that drew you away from the vineyard? Did you have an aha moment or something? You know, what compelled you to make the switch?
Well, I think that winemaking is, it's more complex. It's more involved than being a vineyard manager. And I don't want to lead anyone to believe that vineyard management or being a vineyard manager is not a noble endeavor and that it's not difficult or complicated. But for me, being a winemaker allows me to not only be involved in many aspects of growing the grapes, because I work with all the growers very closely, including at our estate. But on top of that, I get to see it through to the end, you know, all the way to the bottle, and to even market and sell the wine. And to me, that's really satisfying to see the whole process.
Absolutely. And be involved in it. One of the things I think is cool as I was reading up on Iris Vineyards is that is the spirit of, or the philosophy of, am I saying this correctly? Arete, kind of.
That's correct.
Being your best and striving for excellence and in everything, and that's sort of the overriding philosophy at Iris. Did that speak to you? And tell me how you try to implement that.
It does speak to me. And gosh, you know, implementation of a philosophy like that is really a daily task. I think you have to. It's something you have to think about every day and talk to people about every day. And I'm sure people understand how important it is to have good morale in the workplace and to have people buy into all the things that you're trying to do to maintain and improve wine quality. So that's something that's at the heart of Arete, and that that we really work on diligently all the time is buy-in from employees and improving our processes to make the product as good as it can be.
Great. So, and I guess that's a philosophy that the founders and owners of Iris Vineyards established, right?
Correct.
And can you tell us about how you came to be at Iris and a little bit of the history of Iris Vineyards?
Sure. So I was following my stint of harvest at DuPonte, I went to work for Walnut City Wine Works in McMinnville. And I worked for them, let's see, for about 2 years. And they were doing some custom winemaking for a winery called Owen Rowe.
Oh, yes.
So I was involved in helping with that custom winemaking in the Newburgh facility. And so I met the proprietors of Owen Rowe, and following the 02 vintage was offered the assistant winemaker position by them, which I accepted. And so I worked for Owen Rowe for 5 years. So that brought me through the 07 harvest. And a friend of mine who recently retired, he was more on the supply side of the wine industry, so really had his fingers on the pulse of the industry and who was doing what and where. So he advised me that Iris Vineyards was looking for a winemaker. And I contacted them and interviewed for the job, and here I am.
Hey. So you guys are producing some really fun wines. It might be fun to go ahead and taste one of them while we're talking. Which one would you like to start with? You sent us a nice collection. You guys, I should mention, do Pinot Noir, Chardonnay, a sparkling, we have sparkling Brut is what we have. Pinot mm-hmm. Gris is another one of your well-known wines. Tell me what, am I getting all of them there? Am I getting all the varietals?
Oh, there's so much more.
Oh, wow. But wait, there's more.
Yeah, well, let me start with the sparkling program.
Oh, great. Sure.
So you have the Brut.
Yes.
We make four different sparkling wines. The Brut is our only sparkling wine that's blended. Mm-hmm. So it's a blend of Pinot Noir, Chardonnay, and Pinot Gris.
Mm. Oh, Pinot Gris. That's that's what gives it this incredible floral character.
Right.
And Pinot Gris is not a typical variety used in sparkling, especially a traditional method sparkling wine.
I think that's true. You know, Pinot Gris is approved for use in champagne.
Oh, it is. Okay.
It is. So I don't know the extent to which it's actually used in Champagne, but I know it is planted there and it is used by Champagne houses.
Well, I love that it has such a, it's got lively acidity, but it's also got that kind of what toasty flavor to it as well, a little vanilla and just beautiful fruit. This is a great, great sparkling.
Yeah, thank you. And I mean, the last two descriptors, the kind of the vanilla and the toast, it is really indicative of traditional method sparkling wine, I think.
Mm-hmm. Sure, sure. And, you know, I love the fact that you put on the front label fermented in this bottle. I mean, that just, you know, that's such a clear, direct indication that this is a traditional method wine, but you rarely see it in that clear language on any wine label.
Yeah, that's interesting. And it should be, I think it should be more brought to consumers' attention that, you know, there is a difference.
Yes.
I was also impressed. This is such a high quality sparkling and the price point is really good. This is a $30 bottle and it tastes phenomenal. It's really got a lovely, it's a lovely example of what you guys are doing. Really good.
Yeah. So 30 is our suggested retail. So you'll, that said, with any wine, you'll often see it on the shelf a little bit lower priced.
Right. Okay. So direct from you guys. That's correct. What on your website. Right.
Yeah. So it just depends on, you know, what kind of margin the retailer wants to take on the wine. But that wine with an SRP of $29.99 technically will probably hit the shelf in a lot of places at say $27.99.
Okay. Interesting.
And I was talking about the label and on the back side, there's your signature, but there's also another signature. Can you tell us about Pamela Fry?
So Pamela Fry is the owner of the winery and vineyard, and she and her husband, Richard, they've been together probably, I don't know when they were married, but they've probably been together at least 30 years. And they're both native to Eugene, and they both went to the University of Oregon in Eugene, which I believe is where they met, was at the university.
Fun.
and then they were married and they spent a number of years in Europe following their graduation from the university, and they fell in love with the wine industry in Europe. So when they returned to Oregon, that was a big focus of theirs, was to get involved in the industry. And they found this property and were immediately struck by its suitability for planting grapes, and they bought it.
Well, and you mentioned when we were chit-chatting earlier, you mentioned the name Iris Vineyards. I asked you where that came from, and you mentioned it had to do with the property they bought. Can you tell us that story?
Right. So they bought the property in 95, and portions of the property had been logged. So a lot of your listeners are going to know that Oregon is known for timber. So that happens a lot around here is logging and clear cutting is still common, but even more so back then. So that portion, the whole estate is 850 acres. And a portion of it had been clear cut, including the area where the vineyard now is. And when you go into the property, you approach from the east, and you come over this hill that is now forested again, and you see this vineyard in front of you as you crest the hill, and then their home, the owner's home, is up to the right on a hill that at the time that they bought the property was covered in wild Douglas irises. And so this is fairly common in forested areas of the Willamette Valley is when the property is clear cut, these irises, among other native plants, really show themselves.
I didn't know that.
How lovely.
Yeah, it's too bad about the clear cutting, but the iris. The comeback with iris is a really nice way of nature healing itself.
Right. And it's one of the first things that happens, and it is healing.
Mm-hmm. Now, as I look at the label, I also see an eye, as in the iris of your eye. Mm-hmm. So tell me that. So iris has a double meaning. It's the beautiful flower, of course, but also it's what we use to see color, isn't it? Isn't that what the iris does?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So I think that the idea, so this is before I was hired, that they decided to change the concept from the iris flower to the iris of the eye. And I believe that the idea there was to make the label more broadly appealing. So as you can imagine, the iris flower label would be appealing to a certain segment of potential consumers. And the idea with the eye of the iris was to make it more contemporary and more broadly appealing.
Okay. Mm. Yes. But both lovely, lovely, fun concepts.
Absolutely.
So, and then our next wine, which I'm so excited about, is Pinot Gris. It's something that I think the Willamette Valley does really, really well. Tell us about this wine.
Okay. Yeah. So I think after my several years of experience making wine in the Willamette Valley, I really feel like Pinot Noir is a varietal that can be grown throughout the valley successfully, and it gives you different perspectives on the varietal depending on where in the valley it comes from and the soils that it's grown on. But it's still always really good wine. It's technically correct. It's has a varietal character. And with Pinot Gris, I think it has more restrictive requirements to really express itself correctly. Hmm. If that makes sense.
Okay.
So I think that the actual growing areas for Pinot Gris should be more carefully thought out. Hmm. So I think that in our area, we're right next to King Estate, and mm-hmm. as you know, King did a lot to popularize Pinot Gris in the Willamette Valley and
right.
and market it and really take it national. And they weren't the first to grow Pinot Gris in the Willamette Valley, but they did make it made it the second most common varietal planted in the Willamette Valley after Pinot Noir.
Huh. So are you saying that what you're finding is that the Southern Willamette Valley is really very conducive to growing really terrific Pinot Gris?
Well, particularly where we are. Mm-hmm. So our little area is called Lorraine Valley, and it has very significant coastal influence. It's relatively high elevation. So we are, our vineyard, the lowest part is about 800 feet above sea level, and the highest part is about 1100. Vineyards in other parts of the valley, that the highest elevation commonly is right around 700-800 feet and lower. So with our in higher elevation, we have, you know, even cooler evenings and later bud break.
So, oh, okay.
You know, Pinot Gris really thrives in a cooler climate. Mm-hmm. You know, we talk about cool climate for Pinot Noir, and yes, that's very important. But I think Pinot Gris is even more demanding in the microclimate it needs to really shine.
Right. Well, for anyone who likes a Sauvignon Blanc, this is kind of in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Your Pinot Gris is just got nice acidity, but it's not sharp. And it's got a really nice, I get a little bit of grapefruit with it. And it's just, it's a really lovely, yeah. beautiful wine yeah. that's an easy drinker and lower alcohol. This is, I think, about 11% is what I think I saw on the back of the bottle.
Yeah, so 11.5.
Yep. Yeah, I always appreciate that. And, you know, it's not, Pinot Gris is not something, it's not as well known as a Sauvignon Blanc, but kind of in the same, you know, if you like a lighter white, this is a great option. Yeah.
What I love about this is there's a little bit of effervescence to it. Mm-hmm. And I get those really lovely tropical fruit notes, pineapple, guava, some beautiful white florals when you smell it, but it is super zesty, refreshing, and totally quaffable. And especially when it's warm outside, like it is.
Yeah.
Erin, I live in Palm Springs, so this is like okay. the perfect Palm Springs wine. You need to come down and bring cases and cases of this here.
No, it's interesting that you say that. We recently, let's see, about 3 years ago, got distribution in Arkansas, and we're at the time like, okay, Arkansas, you know, maybe we'll sell a pallet of wine a year or something, 56 cases, which isn't a lot for a distributor to do. Well, Arkansas is one of our top five distributors, and we're in about 25 states now.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
That must be fun for you to find your wine all over the country. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. So I went to Arkansas 2 years ago to work with them in the market because they were doing so well. And we wanted to know what was going on down there or over there. So one of the things that that I found out about Arkansas is they love the Pinot Gris. Because as the rep told me, it's a porch pounder.
Yes.
And I'm thinking, well, I don't really want my wine thought of in that way.
No, it's a good thing. It's a good thing. Really.
I love it.
I do too. And that was in one of my notes. I wrote down quaffable.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's awesome.
Sitting on the porch, pounding some wine.
That's like right.
But. And what is also really nice about your Pinot Gris is the price point. You know, Mary Babbitt was talking about the price point on the sparkling Brut, but this is $18 a bottle. I mean,
yeah,
you can't beat that for the quality mm-hmm. and just the how fabulous the wine is. I know I'm gushing, but really I get Thank excited you. When I find a wine that I just, it really checks all the boxes for me.
Yeah, can I just get back to the effervescence for a minute?
Yes, sure. Please. Yeah, yes.
So that effervescence is natural, and so we ferment the wine, in stainless steel at very cold temperatures. So, and I can convert this if you want me to. We work in Celsius at the winery, and so we ferment between 12 and 15 degrees C. And the reason for that is with the slower fermentation, you preserve more aromatics in the wine.
Okay.
And it, I believe it makes the wine more complex and more interesting. One of the side effects of that is that a lot of the carbon dioxide that's produced during fermentation remains dissolved in the wine. And so we bottle in January, right? So we're harvesting in September, October. It ferments for usually over a month. And then we prep the wine for bottling. So it's bottled very fresh. And by the time we get to bottling, we actually usually have to drive some of the CO2 off before we put it in bottle because it's too effervescent.
Interesting.
Yeah. Well, Mary Babbitt, you were telling me before we started the podcast, we were talking about this wine and I mentioned, you know, it's slightly effervescent or frizzante, as they say in Italy. And you said you love wines that have a little bit of effervescence.
It's one of my very favorite qualities. It just, to me, it just makes it more alive in my mouth. And I just love that.
It does. It makes it more lively and it makes the perception of acidity higher. So it, to me, particularly in this Pinot Gris, it gives what I would call a mouth-watering acidity.
Yeah. Nice. I like that.
Yeah. It makes you want to take more sips.
Darn. Now you're really describing me.
I know, really. It's so funny. So, Aaron, I want to get back to your story a little bit too, because, you know, you're making fabulous wines, you're here at Iris, but you're a busy guy because you're also involved in the community. And I want you to tell us about this Willamette Valley. I want to make sure I get the name right. So
I am, let me go back just a little bit.
Yeah.
So prior to the pandemic, Iris Vineyards had been accepted to be one of the 52 wineries involved in Oregon Pinot Camp.
And what is that?
So Oregon Pinot Camp is an event that is organized by and sponsored or put on by the Willamette Valley Wineries Association. The idea of Oregon Pinot Camp is to bring in restaurateurs and retailers to discover and learn more about Willamette Valley wines, particularly Pinot Noir, and to create advocates around the country for Oregon wines. And so that's what Pinot Camp is all about.
One time at Pinot Camp.
Yeah.
That's a bad reference from that movie. Never mind.
Yeah. So unfortunately, as you can imagine, Pinot Camp was canceled in 2020 and then again in 2021. So when it came around to planning for 2022, I was asked to be on the steering committee for the organizing Pinot Camp. So following 2022, in that winter, after harvest, they asked me to be on the DEBI committee. It was a committee at the time. It's a council now. And there's, you know, some nuance of difference there. But
and what is DEBI?
So DEBI is Diversity, Equity, Belonging, and Inclusion. So the Willamette Valley Wineries Association is committed to diversity in the wine industry in the Willamette Valley. And it's a member driven organization. So what the DEBI Council is trying to do is encourage diversity in hiring, diversity in clientele, diversity in suppliers within the industry. And not just with membership, but throughout the industry. And we're providing some tools and guidelines for our members to promote this diversity.
Great. So one thing I read in your bio describing you, it says, gay, sometimes queer, always inspiring. So can you talk about that and how this relates to you being involved in DEBI?
Right. Well, and I think that's one of the reasons I was asked to be on the council. So throughout my career, I haven't made a big deal about being gay. I think that for me, it's mostly a personal thing.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't really impact the way I go about managing what goes on at the winery. So
sure, it's just like being, you know, in any minority community, being a woman shouldn't affect your, you know, it doesn't, you know, exactly. And so I'm so glad you said that.
Right. And I think that, yeah, I mean, it's I don't know, it's a complicated topic, mm-hmm. Regardless of which minority you're talking about. And I think that part of the effort of the Debbie Council is to open people's eyes to the fact that, you know, despite somebody being a woman or being gay or being a person of color, doesn't necessarily mean they're going to bring a bunch of baggage to the workplace.
Of course not. Right. And so I'm impressed that you are willing to get involved and represent and stand up and say, yeah, this is part of who I am. It's another part of who I am is a fantastic winemaker, but this is all part of the facets of what makes me me. And I'm proud of that. And I think that every time we say that about ourselves, it makes everybody else more comfortable. So good for you.
Absolutely. And I think that's something I've realized more and more lately, is that it's important for me to be more open about it and let people know, in not in a confrontational way, but in a informational way, that, yeah, this is who I am. But despite that, I can do this job and do it really well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we have another wine to try.
Yes, the Pinot Noir. Tell us about this one. This is your Estate C Block. And wow, this is a real, just a mouth party, you know. It's got some beautiful stuff going on. So to help us learn more about the Iris Pinot Noir Estate C Block.
Yeah, our, as you mentioned earlier, our vineyard was planted in 96, but there were some later plantings, including C Block, which was planted in 08, the first part of it was. And so around about 2014, we bottled our first C Block Pinot Noir. And the reason for that was that the wines were just exceptional in barrel, and really luscious, beautiful wines. And we thought, well, let's bottle this and see how well it sells. And it did go well. we did some changes to the sourcing of the fruit within the vineyard over the years. I feel like people, vines get into some awkward teenage years where the wines that are produced are a little bit out of balance.
Mm-hmm.
And so that did happen with C Block. And I think it was 2016. We did, it was 2016, 2017. We bottled D Block instead of C Block. So a little bit older vines. They were not planted in 96. They were planted in, I think, 02 or 03. And they're 113 and 115 clones. So a really different wine, but it was showing a lot better than C Block at the time. So C Block is predominantly Pommard clone, and it's a little bit lower elevation than D Block, but steepest sloping part of the vineyard and shallowest soils. So we get really good concentration in that fruit. Good sun exposure. The vines our vineyard is entirely unirrigated. So with the shallow soils, you get a little more, you know, of the vines struggling and to get the water and get the nutrients, and that impacts the quality of the fruit in a good way.
Mm-hmm. You guys are slightly warmer in the Southern Willamette Valley, and since you're a little bit further south than the Northern Willamette Valley typical vineyards. Tell me how that impacts the flavor in a Pinot Noir, since the area is widely known for Pinot Noir, Willamette Valley in general. Tell me about the differences in the Southern flavor profile.
I would just say that the microclimates are really important. So, for example, despite, say, McMinnville ABA being 100 miles north of us, you say, oh, yeah, well, it's north, more northerly, it's going to be cooler. McMinnville is a really hot sub-ABA compared to the rest of the Willamette Valley, including the south. Now, where we are in, at the very southern tip of the Willamette Valley ABA, we actually get a lot of coastal influence where the cool air comes in from the coast every afternoon, cools things off. We get nice cool nights. And some of your listeners will know that a big diurnal shift in temperature is really important to wine quality, in that cooler evening temperatures help preserve acidity in the grapes, and they extend the length of the ripening phase. And that extension of that ripening phase gives you more nuance of flavor, more complexity. And so that's what we're looking for in these growing areas. So just because we're 100 miles south doesn't mean we're warmer than the northern part of the valley necessarily.
Interesting.
Gotcha. Yeah. Well, this is really elegant. It's a beautiful Pinot Noir and really expresses the all the goodness of your area. It's really delicious. You've done a nice job with this one.
And no, it's got all this bright Bing cherry, raspberry, pomegranate fruit flavors, baking spices and the aromas, and terrific minerality and acid.
Yeah. And I like that spicy. That's nice.
Right. And that's one of the things you're going to see in, you know, if you drink a lot of Willamette Valley Pinot Noir, the cooler areas are going to give you wines that show more what we call red fruit. So, and you mentioned them, the raspberry and the cherry, strawberry is another one, or even rhubarb. And some of the warmer climate microclimates are going to give you more dark fruits, you know, blackberry, blueberry, and things like that. Now, this I'm simplifying a little bit, because soils are also a very big factor in this, and those darker fruits tend to come from sedimentary soils more than from residual soils, at least in the Willamette Valley.
Sure. So, Aaron, I want to talk about your new tasting room, which Iris opened recently. Can you tell us about it? Set the scene for us, where it is, what it's all about.
Sure. So prior to the pandemic, our tasting room was at our vineyard, and it was right next to the owner's home. So I think we closed in May of 2020. And then when we thought it was a good time to reopen, the owners were not keen on having it next to their home anymore. So we found a space in downtown Springfield, which is just east of Eugene, home of the Simpsons.
Really? I love that.
Yeah, Springfield, Oregon.
Of course.
So we're right downtown on Main Street in Springfield. It's a beautiful, cozy place. We have a nice back patio that's outside, that's enjoyable year round. And we set it up with some heaters and cover for the rain and sun. But it's beautiful back there, and inside is nice and cozy. We serve a lot of wines there. So, you know, you have the ones that you have, and they're all distributed wines, but we also make a number of other really small lot wines that are intended for our club and people who visit our tasting room.
Awesome. Well, that's the perfect time to tell folks it would be a fun detour. Most people head to the north, but there's an emerging wine scene in Southern Willamette Valley. And it's, you know, you get more personal contact when you're not going to the place, you know, the following the main tourist track. So Southern Willamette Valley, Iris Vineyards, certainly worth your visit and worth your find these wines. They are delicious. And Aaron Lieberman, it's been such a pleasure getting to chat with you today, getting to know you better. We love what you're doing up there, so keep it up. And we will keep our eyes on you. Get it? And wish you all the best with Iris.
Absolutely. No, we love the wines. We want more people to know about them because, you know, this they're great, especially for the price points and the quality and the passion. And you are just, you know, what you're doing with the community, it's just all fantastic. So we really appreciate you taking the time to come on Sip Sip Hooray and tell us all about Iris. And it's been great getting to know you and taste with you.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Mary. And Mary, like I said at the beginning, I'm really pleased to have been on the program appreciate your time.
Ah, well, cheers to you, Aaron, and sip, sip, hooray.
Cheers.
Well, that was super fun getting to know Aaron Lieberman of Iris Vineyards better. What a great guy. And he sure is turning out some beautiful wines up there.
Yeah, he really is. And this is what's fun about our podcast is we get to meet and introduce all of you, our listeners, to wineries and winemakers you may not get a chance to hear about any other way. And, you know, it's just like, keep your palate open, keep your eyes and ears open to folks out there who are doing great work in regions that you may not be as familiar with.
Well, and as we mentioned, the price points, sometimes when you get off the big main path of wine that everybody knows, the big names, you find some outstanding wine at a really reasonable price. Yeah. So Iris Vineyards is producing great stuff and they're not overcharging for it. So right, that's really exactly. Fun.
And, you know, it's just fun to get to know a winemaker who's not just making wine. I mean, his background was so appropriate for what he's doing now, you know, with soil science and the Peace Corps and the corn and the seeds and everything. Who knew?
Yeah, really cool guy. Super fun. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Sip Sip Hooray, the podcast. And if you did, we hope you will share the word with your friends, rate us, give us a review, follow us. That makes a big difference when you follow us on whatever platform you're listening, whether it's Spotify, Apple Music, wherever you're finding us. If you follow us, that helps us build an audience. And we sure need that and would appreciate it.
And if you want to know when our new episodes drop, head to our Substack and you'll find us at Sip Sip Hooray Podcast on Substack. You can subscribe to us and you will get an email notifying you when our new episodes drop, so you don't want to miss anything. And of course, you can be social with us. We are on Instagram and Facebook at Sip Sip Hooray Podcast. And we'd love for you to comment, send us a DM, any questions, any comments. We'd love to hear from you and keep the conversation going. And of course, you'll find information about Iris Vineyards, everything we've talked about today, and past episodes too on our website, sipsipparaypodcast.com.
All right, Mary Orland, this was fun. Can't wait to do it again.
That's right.
Cheers to you and Sip Sip Hooray.
Cheers.